Hello, my name is Rebecca Tapp, and this is the DNA of Purpose podcast, proudly brought to you by the team at Future Crunch.
Everything that goes out is affecting something. So what's your impact?
What I see is a huge amount of people from around the world that really want that transformation and they really want that change.
We are the improbable manifestation of the most profound creation this magnificent universe has to offer.
Welcome to another episode of the DNA of Purpose podcast, and this is the last episode for 2021. Oh, what a year. It has certainly been a year where life has happened in all of its ups and downs, and through it all, every single one of us did what we do best. We adapted, we gained survival skills, expanded our horizons, and harnessed the strength to overcome one of the greatest challenges of our time. We grew in our pursuit to live a purposeful life, to create a better future, and to make this world a better place. At the same time, we acknowledge that with the full force of the outside world, and boy, there was a lot of force at times, just how lucky we are to be here and to have a chance to experience life in all of its nuances, all of its unfairness, and, well, in all of its beauty. We accepted that none of us know what's coming next, and yet we had the ability to face it, to transform it into something that's a benefit for the people and a benefit for our planet, that it was an opportunity to grow ourselves, our business, and perhaps even learn to love both the science and the magic of change. I know that we certainly celebrated that on nearly every episode of the podcast this year. As we move forward into 2022, we have so many reasons to be excited. It doesn't matter where you start. It might be embracing the amateur mindset and opening your mind to new possibilities, or realizing our opinion has room to shift and room to evolve, or just remembering that we are remarkable and that we are built for this. All of this, this ability to evolve, to grow and to transform, this is in our DNA. And we are never too old, never too young, to set out on a new adventure or to try just one new thing. Overall, in 2022, I know that we have it in us to be stronger, to be smarter, and to be kinder. So let's do it better this time around. Let's just make that decision. Let's keep stepping into our purpose, acknowledging that if we are ever lost in this complex yet crazy world, just to remember this, that collaboration always trumps genius. And I know for me, this podcast would not be possible without the power of collaboration. The words I just shared would not be possible without the power of collaboration. And everything, you know, everything that I do, every conversation I have would not be possible without not only the Future Crunch team, the team behind this podcast, behind all our speaking presentations, but also the wonderful guests that give us their time, that show up, that lean into these types of conversations that truly do change the world. And that is also why I am very excited to introduce today another partner in purpose, today's guest on the podcast. His name is Thomas Colster, and he is a marketing activist on a mission to make business put people and the planet first. He is certainly one of our kind. He is the founder and director of the Goodvertising Agency and one of the pioneers in shaping brands for good. Now, today we will be talking about his latest book, which is called The Hero Trap. Now, in the book, Thomas takes a hatchet to his earlier beliefs. Love that. Love opinions that evolve, as I just mentioned. And he warns brands about purpose. Now, the essence of the book's message is that purpose is not a promotional stunt, and that the brand should never really be the hero. Why? because purpose is about the people, and the people embody the DNA of purpose. That is why we need to put the people first and make them the hero. From there, a brand can build a purpose and really truly build a movement around that purpose because it belongs to the people. Now, Thomas has a belief that a large majority of brands get stuck in what he calls the hero trap. Now, one of the things we discussed is that he believes that brands actually need to focus more on the promise of transformation by asking this question: who can you help me become? And he says that one essential question is what you need to be asking and acting on to chart a new course for your brand, changing behaviours at scale and unlocking sustainable growth that benefits all. Thomas heralds the beginning of a new post-purpose era where brands will be seen as villains if they don't put people's dreams, aspirations, and creativity first. So, before signing off for the last episode in 2021, I just want to let you all know that we'll be back on air on Wednesday, the 13th of January, with season 4 of the podcast. I can't believe we're up to season 4. And the other bit of news is, come that time, I will be a married lady and coming back to the podcast as Mrs. Rebecca McLeod. So look out for the new Mrs. McLeod on the DNA of Purpose podcast. Wow, new year, a new era, and a year that I hope for all of us is the best one yet. I wish you all a Merry Christmas and a wonderful holiday season full of love, light, and happiness. Love from me and all of the team at Future Crunch. Welcome to the last episode of the DNA of Purpose podcast for 2021. Thomas Colster, it is such a pleasure to have you on the DNA of Purpose podcast. Welcome to the show, all the way from Denmark.
Thank you so much, Rebecca, for being my wake-up call. Normally, I'm not up this early, so...
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries. I got a cup of coffee, so I'm up.
Oh, good. Well, I'm gonna dive in with a good question to get, you know, get that coffee working and get the conversation flowing. That question that I am going to start with is one that I actually ask every guest on the podcast. Now, you are someone who really works on the forefront of social change and more specifically how to communicate and connect on social change. So I'm wondering, is there any one idea or innovation that you've been pondering of late that you believe will significantly ignite human progress in the 21st century?
Wow.
I said it was a good one. Get that coffee out.
Yeah. I'm awake now.
Yeah.
You know what? I think a lot of my work is focused on behavior change and what motivates people and stuff like that, because I think the one thing that's lacking right now is, in fact, action and collective action, that all of us step up and do something about this big mess we're in right now. I think the same is being said in all the climate reports that are coming out. This is a time for all of us to act. So a lot of the innovations I look at is, in fact, innovations that motivates us. And one of the things I'm quite passionate about at the moment, and it's I'm also plugging some friends here, so I'll have to mention that, but is a fintech app called Duconomy. And basically what the economy does is that it puts estimates on our a carbon estimate on our spending. So sort of when you get your financial statement from your bank or your credit card provider, it will actually give you a sort of carbon estimate on that. And in a way, I think that's a tool for us to know our climate impact and do something about it. It's like when we want to lose weight, we step on the scale and we're like, okay, maybe 86 kilos is too much, it's too little, whatever. And I think Duconomy has been successful at doing that. So I'm really following their journey. And I know one of the founders, Matthias, today is actually on stage today in Glasgow doing the COP 26.
Yeah, look, there's something to be said for just having the information and then using that information to inspire action today that the future needs us to address today in order to really step into more sustainable solutions.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's also just, you know, there's a tendency to do all this finger pointing at governments and at companies, et cetera, and saying, hey, wait a moment, are they doing enough? But most of the time, the thing is, are we actually really doing enough? And that's also a question that I ask myself quite often, and I always feel guilty. So, yeah.
Yeah. So I have to say I'm really excited about today's conversation for several reasons, but one of them is because we get to bust some common myths about purpose, and more specifically brand purpose. And that's something that I really enjoyed in doing my research for today's podcast. And I can tell you I'm coming up to my 100th interview actually next week on the podcast.
Wow.
So yeah,
I would have loved to be number 100. Now I'm just number 99.
Well, Thomas, I think you'll actually be 101, which I believe is quite an auspicious number in spiritual traditions. It's a lucky number, so you get that one.
Oh, good.
But no, look, I did really enjoy doing my research, because I have heard a lot of stories about brand purpose and purpose in general, and there is a very common narrative that is so often shared, and it's not often that I come across somebody who's really questioning those assumptions. And I believe that your book, The Hero Trap, really does not only question those assumptions, but provides a new way of seeing brand purpose with regards to how we can truly empower the people. So I'm super excited to dive further into the conversation today. However, right now, I actually want to understand a little more about the evolution of your personal purpose. I know that you commenced your career in the world of advertising, and then you moved into purpose-driven advertising, or what you referenced in your first book as goodvertising. That said, I also know from watching one of your TED Talks that there was a point where your understanding in regards to the role of purpose really began to shift. You began to see it differently. Do you remember the moment where you had that realization? And if so, how did that influence your perspectives that you were now sharing today in Hero Trap?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think, because I came into the creative industry as a copywriter, and I didn't really have a dream of entering advertising. I loved writing, and I knew that I had a creative side that I somehow needed to express. And so for me, this is more than a decade ago, the first book was actually Provoked, which is quite ironic right now when we're in the middle of COP26, was actually sparked by COP15 in Copenhagen and the frustration I had as a young creative. And thinking about what is my role and how could I contribute when our elected government leaders wasn't standing up to the challenge. So that was my sort of first light bulb moment where I sort of embraced purpose and wrote that first book, Goodvertising. But you know what, like 3 years ago, having worked with leaders, brands on purpose, I sort of had a kind of weird disconnect, because I'd been in that sort of eye of the hurricane of purpose for so long. And the thing that sparked or woke me up this time was I was away on a, I do these sort of trips each year, typically around Christmas, and I go away all by myself and I reflect on some of the changes I want to see in my life and in the business and stuff like that. And I remember this specific moment where I was like, damn, it's really, really hard to create change in my own life and in my business. And that sort of sparked this turn of perspective, in the sense that I was like, wait a moment, if we want to change the world, maybe we have to begin somewhere else. Maybe we have to begin with the individual. And that was sort of the thing that sparked my thinking. And also another thing that I think is worth mentioning is that I don't go out and just critique purpose and say, you know, purpose is nonsense, et cetera. I actually put forward what I think is a viable solution that actually is much more successful at creating the change that we really need urgently today.
Absolutely. And as I said to you before the podcast, it's a perspective I wholeheartedly agree with. Not just from a brand purpose point of view, which we're going to talk about that a lot more over the course of the podcast, but even in looking at how we connect with organizational purpose from a cultural point of view, because, you know, so many brands are out there saying, right, we need a purpose. We need to inspire our people and engage our employees. And yet at the same time, it's kind of this band-aid solution where we're like, let's retrofit purpose and then expect all of these individuals to come on that journey without really understanding who those individuals are becoming and what their aspirations are and how that purpose actually aligns with their dreams. So, you know, I think this whole idea of the hero trap is kind of something that applies to organisations internally as much as it does in regards to how organisations go about communicating a brand strategy and connecting with people.
I absolutely agree. I think for me, I look at it as sort of life-centric.
Yeah.
So if we begin with the individual, it will naturally both point inside the organization, outside the organization. And, you know, I think that whole idea about, you know, corporates and this chase and this search for purpose, I sometimes say that purpose is a bit like Pokemon. Everybody's searching for it, but nobody really knows why. And I think the challenge is that you suddenly have all these brands and organizations and leaders that are like, oh, I gotta have a purpose. And it almost seems like the one thing that hasn't changed in advertising and from a company perspective is that they always put themselves first.
Yeah.
And my beef is that, you know, for the most part, if you sat down an organization in this chair I'm sitting on right now, you know, and then at a psychologist, then the psychologist would probably say that that brand would either be, you know, megalomaniac or delusional, or, you know, because all these statements are so navel gazing and so much focused on the change that the organization can do, rather than actually understanding how does that matter, and, you know, what does that mean in my life? what makes me tick when I wake up in the morning? Because all these do good for people and planet things, you know, how many of us wake up in the morning and are like, yeah, do good for people and planet? Not a lot of us. So a lot of the reflection I had was also, there's just too many heroes out there at the moment, and it's just not genuine. And I don't think people are buying that stuff, to be honest.
Yeah, look, I completely agree. And I guess now would be a good time for you to give us a little bit of a summary around what you mean by the hero trap. What is the hero trap?
You know, I think the hero trap basically is this perspective where, you know, the brand or the leader put itself as the very center of change. And I like to sort of provokingly take Patagonia as an example, because it's one of those purpose pioneers that everybody's talking about. But if you really literally listen to what Patagonia is saying, we're in the world, we're in the business to save our home planet. For me, that sounds pretty crazy and grandiose, right?
Yeah.
And especially for a company that basically is selling t-shirts. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
And so this, as I said, I think the problem is whether you are looking for work or whether you're in the supermarket, when every brand and organization out there is pitching itself as Mother Teresa or Jesus or Gandhi, you don't really trust it. And I think that's sort of the hero trap that I'm witnessing more and more. And especially because I've, you know, from my first book and some of the early examples of purpose, Dove, Body Shop, you know, even Patagonia in that context, Ben and Jerry, there were few of them. Mm. Today, it looks like a bigger cast of the Avengers movie, right? I mean, they're all heroes. And so for me, that's sort of the hero trap, that thing that I wanted to understand, as I said, back to that trip. What does it really take to create change? How do we motivate you and I in taking part of that change? And I just don't think, and I can see from the dates and the research that we have done, that that happens by having some sort of company or leader screaming, look at me, I'm the one that's going to create change. I'm the one that's going to change the world.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the hero trap. And I've been guilty of doing that the first 10 years of my career, you know, advising leaders and organizations to do that. So I've fallen into the hero trap myself multiple times.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think we've all been guilty of that in some way or another, and it might not be, you know, related to organizational purpose, but just if we look at our own lives, there's always that dance between ego and contribution. And what's in it for me, or how do I use the gifts that I have in order to create transformation or to create change? So I think a part of that is just the human condition.
I think you're actually absolutely right. And I think it's also about what is in fact great leadership.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the key questions, and maybe you can even answer this yourself, and the listeners can reflect on this, but one of the key questions I asked myself was, you know, what leader, organization, or brand have in fact created positive change in my life?
Mm.
Because I think it's much bigger than that. And my list was extremely short. I don't know if you have an answer yourself of a leader or brand or organization who actually created positive change in your life.
Look, I could probably answer that question on one hand. There's probably about five who've significantly influenced my life. And the reason for that resonates so much with your message and what you're saying, and is because those brands and those people inspired me to step into a new potential. They inspired me to become a better version of who I was. And that is why they had such a big impact.
Yeah, and I think a lot of organizations and leaders didn't become irrelevant because they didn't have a strong burning platform. But most of the time, I think they become irrelevant because they didn't really know what role they wanted to play in my life.
Mm.
And that's where I see a lot of organizations and leaders, you know, run into the wild, run into the hero trap. Because they get lost.
Mm.
And that's why I think, especially in this day and age where we actually have an urgency of getting people motivated and ignited to be part of this change, I think it's really, really an important dialogue to have right now.
Absolutely. So, Thomas, I want to frame this up, and I think you have framed this up beautifully. You know, when I did a little bit of research on Google, I jumped on, I think, the Booktopia website or one of the pages that was selling your book, and I just took note of the tagline for the book, which is How to Win in a Post-Purpose Market by Putting People in Charge. Now, I loved this because over the last few years, and we've just referenced it, there's been so much talk celebrating, quote unquote, the purpose economy. And, you know, I think it's awesome that we are seeing businesses care more, but I also think there are some hidden truths with the purpose economy. And to frame that up, the purpose economy firstly exists as a part of the economy. So what that means is it still relies heavily on this idea that we need to buy more, we need to accumulate more things. And that's counterintuitive to what it actually means to be sustainable. And then secondly, purpose-driven products are actually really expensive. And so therefore, to afford, say, the Adidas Parley for ocean shoes as one example that comes to mind, we generally need to be in a position of privilege to some extent. And there is that bias towards wealth. So with this in mind, it's not surprising that young people have some distrust around brand purpose. I love the idea that we can evolve from purpose in business to something that focuses on the role of the people who hold the key to change, because it kind of dilutes some of those hidden truths. It is no longer about a brand trying to inspire people to buy more because we're doing good in the world. And it's more about enabling, you know, shifting brands from, say, the evangelist, which is what you're talking about, this idea that we're out there being the hero, to the empowerers, to brands that are truly empowering people with their own experiences so that they can take ownership for the change that we all need in the world. So with these things in mind, what does a post-purpose market look like, and why is this a better solution?
I think one of the key things that I didn't solve with my first book, Good Advertising, was in fact that thing around solving consumption.
Yeah.
I mean, because I think you're spot on. I mean, you know, we're still plugging products. Now it's just a product with values, you know, with a more sort of world-saving perspective. But we're still not solving anything, in fact. And I think the shift I see in a post-purpose market is, in fact, that we're not buying what you do or why you do what you do, because now every company got these so-called values, but essentially by who we can become. Mm. So it's much more about our journey. It's much more about self-actualization. It's much more about all these things that we actually discovered were valuable during the pandemic. I mean, I think a lot of us, you know, suddenly have, you know, and this was something that was even a trend before the pandemic, but that we know that the best things in life aren't things, that shopping isn't going to make us happy. Mm. So what I really wanted to put forward with the book was, in fact, that, hey, wait a moment, brands and leaders can actually help us achieve amazing things in our lives. They can help us, you know, break down barriers. They can help us take a hard look at biases. They can help us live more healthy, more sustainable lives. And all of that doesn't necessarily need to be tied to consumption. I have an example of it's not a startup anymore because they've been able to scale their business quite a bit, but it's called District Vision, and it started by two guys in their early 30s, Tom and Max. And basically Tom and Max they both love running, and apparently you need running glasses when you run. I don't use running glasses, but anyway,
I don't either. That sounds pretty cool though.
it does, but most running glasses look like something out of Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminator movie, right? These like a slim, ugly glasses, right?
So they wanted this to is do glued something to about my it. Face.
Exactly. So they came from fashion. They wanted to do something that was beautiful. But what was really so inspiring when I spoke to these two guys was, in fact, that wasn't really why they were doing the company. Because one of the things they've been doing for years was they've been practicing yoga, and they realized that when your mind and your body is connected, you become a better runner. So basically what they teach people is mindful running, and how they kickstarted the company was by doing mindful running classes. And sort of, so that's the transformation they offer. They've even been so successful at it that right now they run programs in the New York State prison system, where they teach inmates mindful training. And so for me, that's a really good example of a shift in mindset, because today, I mean, young people aren't, you know, buying a T-shirt with a do-good label on it anymore. Yeah. They much rather want to wear a T-shirt with their own accomplishments on their chest. And yeah. I think that's a
shift. And they have access to that too, don't they? They can get that themselves.
I agree. That's a shift. That's a probably even more important shift to look at, because that's why I wanted to have that putting people in charge in there in the purpose market. Because, you know, I always tell young people when I'm out in universities and stuff, and I actually have a really good example of that. I did a keynote at a university. I've been doing that keynote at the same university, Copenhagen Business School, for quite some years. And typically you have a couple of purposeful companies, they have their little presentation, and then I have my presentation. And so usually at a business school, you would think that all of these young minds would love to go and work for these purposeful companies. So each year I asked the students, how many of you want to go and work for some of these purposeful companies in the room? And last time I did that, which is just before the pandemic, so about 2 years ago, only 30 people out of 300 people raised their hands. And I was completely shocked. Mm. And I was like, why is that? Can somebody in this auditorium explain me, what do you want to do then? And there was this young woman who raises her hand, and she's like, you know what? I rather want to work for myself. I don't think business is really doing the right thing at the moment. And so I would rather look to a startup to work for that's doing the right thing, or I'd start my own business. And I think that's the sort of mentality that I'm fascinated by. I think it wasn't, you know, when we were growing up, I don't think it was as easy to start your own company. But today, I mean, you can so easily do it, right? You can even get access to capital so easy. And when I interviewed Mark Pritchett, the global CMO of Procter & Gamble, which is one of the world's biggest fast-moving consumer goods companies, he even said that even though Procter & Gamble had been in the business for 180 years, I didn't actually know they had that long a history, and they have some of the best researchers employed, yet people don't trust P&G, they rather want to buy soap from some 18-year-old kid that makes it out of his mom's basement. And I think that really shows that there's a fundamental shift happening. And what I think we're witnessing right now is this early evolution towards that post-purpose market, where it's really not about transaction, but it's about transformation.
I have so many questions about what you just said, and I'm going to bookmark myself because there are just so many underlying themes in what that more broadly means for the future of the economy. And this idea that we're shifting away from the, you know, from young people consuming from these big corporations or working within these big corporations to taking action on their own dreams, stepping into their own potential, and they, through digitization, have access for our generation. I mean, I don't know how old you are, but I imagine we would be maybe similar age, that we just didn't have that level of access in order to be able to go, hey, this is my dream, and I can find out just by, you know, putting this search term into Google, how I go about creating that. So the access that enables that kind of empowerment for young people is something that's really interesting. But I mean, I also love the soap example, because what you're seeing there is whilst we are living in a world that is being redefined by globalization, counterintuitively, it's also enabling us to reconnect with what it means to be human, to connect locally, to consume locally, and all of those sub themes. So, as I said, there's, you know, I'll bookmark that because there's so many directions we could take the conversation in. But I want to talk about the hero trap today. Now, if I'm, you know, listening today to today's podcast as a CEO or a leader, I feel like there's kind of two themes here. I just, you know, reference the impact of digitization on young people. And I think one of the areas that has created so much, I guess, influence in is the world of movement making. You know, we now are living in an age where we've got the Greta Thunbergs or the Eva Gonzalez, who I think did a 7-minute speech to raise awareness of, I think, gun control in America, as two examples that come to mind. And both of these women, like these young women, created these extraordinary movements. We've seen the Me Too movement, we've seen Black Lives Matter, and, you know, I think with digitization, these movements very quickly go from an idea into influence and then build the velocity to truly create global movements. So we have that happening on one side, and then on the other side, we have this whole trend around how we create purpose-driven business and purpose-driven brand narratives. What I'm hearing from you is that as an organization, we need to kind of play in the space in between. We need to begin to shift from being message makers and going out into the world saying, hey, I'm the hero and here's my story of being the hero, into becoming movement makers. And we do that via providing the experiences that you just spoke about, for example, with mindful running and different, we use different methods in order to be able to inspire ownership of our brand. So I'm interested to know, through your experience and your lens, if you know, there is a leader or a CEO out there listening to us right now, what is it that shifts an idea into the kind of velocity that can create that movement that we're seeking to create if we want to inspire heroes?
I think the first step is that change of perspective. sort of being a preacher,
yeah,
to being a coach. And I think one of the people that I quote in the book is, in fact, Barack Obama. And you can say a lot about how he might not have delivered all that he promised on his political platform. But one of the things he said when he stepped down and he did his last speech in Chicago, where he was also elected into the Senate, I think we all obviously know his, you know, platform, you know, yes, we can. But I think he said something quite beautifully. He said, yes, we can. It's not about all of us to believe in his ability to create change, but it's about all of us to believe in our own ability to create change. Mm. And I think that's really where, for me, that's what great leadership is about. Great leaders make me achieve extraordinary things. And that's why the perspective that I'm seeing right now from purposeful companies are so wrong, because they put themselves first. They see them, they view themselves as the heroes. And I think especially as we talk about young people today, they just don't fundamentally believe in that stuff. I think they are much more self-empowered. And I think, you know, if you look at Greta Thunberg, if you look at the Me Too movement, I think the Me Too movement is really interesting, because, in fact, it's not about all of us to believe in a certain leader or a certain specific concept about what Me Too is. I can easily, as a man, also be part of the Me Too movement. So I think it's an open, it's a collaborative movement that wants each and us, each and every one of us, to take part in that change. And I think that's key. And also, when one of the things I really wanted to understand was this sort of intention action gap. I think, as we spoke about earlier, change is so difficult. I mean, there's so many things that we promise ourselves we want to do, and you know, might want to lose weight now. New Year's is coming up, right? We might want to lose weight. We might want to start cooking more, or whatever it might be. And most of the time we fail miserably. And so one of the things we did for the book was we commissioned a research where we compared classic purposeful commercials that put the brand at the center of change, and compared that to transformative commercials that put you and I at the center of change. And the interesting thing was the transformative commercials was an average were an average 29.6% better at motivating us, and people were an average 29.4% more willing to pay a premium price. So we value that communication much more. So I think that's the shift that needs to happen right now.
So Thomas, I'm curious to, I guess, understand the methods of storytelling with regards to putting the focus back on the people, on the consumers. Now, I know you've spoken a little bit about creating an experience. What other ways, if we're, you know, a leader, a CEO, advertising agency, what other methods can we use to really be able to inspire the consumer's transformation?
I think we touched on it in the beginning, but I think sometimes there is so much, it's been so much discussion around purpose the last 3 to 4 years, and a lot of finger pointing. And I didn't want to put a book out there or a message out there just pointing fingers at what's happening right now without coming with a solution, because I think we're at a time where solutions are needed.
Absolutely.
And so this book sort of started at a completely different way, in the sense that I actually started working on a methodology rather than just start writing a book. And I created a methodology called the Arrow that was, in fact, inspired by psychotherapy and coaching, because both of those disciplines are goal-oriented.
Mm.
And one of the models, I always love simple models, but one of the models that I took from coaching was a really simple one that was called I Want, I Can, I Will. So there's something I want in my life. I can is really about building the right capabilities, and I will is obviously taking that step towards action. And I turned that model around and created something I call the arrow that asks four fundamental questions that leaders and brands and organizations can ask themselves. And the first one is really, what is it that you do? Which is obviously a simple question. That might be the MacBook, the AirPods, whatever it might be. The next question is, how are you unique in delivering your products and service? Really sort of digging into the capabilities, what you are good at. And the third and probably most important question is, who can you help people become? So suddenly you're not looking inside the organization, looking for your big why, even though you sort of are, but you're trying to find that why in your relationship with whom you want to build that relationship with. What barriers, challenges are they facing? What dreams, aspirations do they have? And how can you play into that? So, for example, if you take Nike, I mean, they have a really clear who can help people become, because they are speaking to people who want to push their athletic performance further. Mm. And that's a pretty clear one. I think if you look to, there's a health insurance company called Discovery. What they want to do is they want to incentivize people to live healthier. So very sort of clear who as well. And the last step in the arrow is really, when can you enable that change? So really a clear focus on the deadline, because I think if we, and that can be a certain period of time, it can be a call to action, it could be a certain place. And for me, that was important, because if you don't have that sort of when, I don't think that organizations, the leaders, are going to be that successful.
It puts an accountability on it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And the outcome of that, I call a transformative promise, because I felt that purpose was a word that was too big for its own good. And a transformative promise is really a promise about a change that you can enable in someone's life. Mm. So it's a really, really, really stringent focus on change. And it's so interesting to work with leaders and organizations using this model, because it really truly changes their perspective from putting themselves up on the hero's pedestal and, you know, nonsense statements like, you know, we want to do something for the world's oceans or things like that. So really kind of anchor it in my life and see, what's the relevance in my life? What is it that you do? And the interesting thing about it is that quite often when you use this methodology, there are so many unused roles that one can play. Take dating, for example. it's such a competitive market, right? There's so many dating apps out there, and you wouldn't really think that you would be able to come up with something new. And suddenly you have Bumble, which is a female-friendly dating app where the women have do the first move. Again, you know, you have a clear role to play. You found a clear who that you can own, and so a lot of times when we work with leaders and organizations, we actually sort of look for these who words in our lives and in what matters in our lives, and in the book I actually do share 12 stories from real people who are struggling with something, and each of those struggles or each of those ambitions are a possibility for a brand or leader to play a meaningful and transformative difference in their lives.
Look, I absolutely love the idea of the transformative promise. I think that's genius, and I think it really deeply connects to the human experience of the brand. So I do have a question around how we can maybe leverage things like influencer branding or stepping into business influence in order to really communicate that transformative promise in a compelling way, and what your thoughts are about that. What I want to, I guess, dig into a little bit is the risk factor in that. Because the other thing is, when you're making a transformative promise to the consumer, there's so much that you don't have control of. Like, what if that person doesn't do the work or doesn't go through the transformation, or, as you said before, you know, has the intention to go to the gym 5 days a week but doesn't actually transform that intention into action? Like, that's quite a lot of risk for an organization. Like, how do you mitigate that?
You know, I think there's a bigger risk in going out there and saying, look at us as a brand or as a leader, we're going to create change.
Yeah.
Because what we've seen time and time again is that they're being criticized. They are not delivering on their promises. A lot of the time, it's just plain BS. I mean, take Ben & Jerry's, for example. It's one of the early purposeful companies and, you know, obviously started by the two folks, Ben & Jerry. And yes, it might have been a purposeful, or it is a purposeful company, but it might have been a more genuine company in the sense that when Ben & Jerry started, and it's still this purpose that, you know, we're doing the best possible ice cream in the nicest possible way. But when you really listen to that today, best possible ice cream, I probably have like 10 ice cream makers just in my neighborhood that are way better, that are sort of organic, that are giving back to the community, you know, and nicest again, you know, it's sort of corporate BS. It's a bland industrialized ice cream. And so I think that's the real danger, is that when you put yourself up on that pedestal, you can be criticized. If you're a transformative brand and you're out there and you say, we're here to incentivize you to live healthier, it's pretty damn hard to point fingers at the health insurance company and say, hey, wait a moment, you know, I didn't succeed. You know, maybe it's your own fault, right?
Yeah.
I think you're actually kind of removing a bit of that sort of purpose pressure cooker type thing that's happening right now by taking this transformative approach.
Yeah. And as I said before, it's a more human approach. We were talking before the podcast about the fact that you had recently been interviewed by my friend and colleague, the one and only Julie Masters, on the Inside Influence podcast, which I am more than happy to plug. And, you know, Jules's, I guess, modus operandi is around business influence and how we can really go about, you know, amplifying our voice in order to stand out. And when I say that, I mean our human voice, not our brand voice.
Yeah.
I'm curious to understand the intersection between influencer branding and what you're talking about in regards to truly making the consumers the hero and how we go about reaching those people. What's been your experience, your thoughts with regards to deploying an influencer strategy to, you know, liberate businesses from the hero trap?
One of the things I write about in the book, and you know, for me, it was the book itself sort of became a journey in the sense that even as our conversation, there's so many doors you can open up and there's so many avenues that you can explore in this space. And at some point I was like, oh, should I have this chapter or should I leave this chapter out and stuff like that? But I ended up adding this chapter and around what I call transformative platforms. And in so many instances, it's, you know, If it's a leader picking up the book, it's probably one of those chapters that's a little bit more like marketing like, and so it's not for everyone. Mm. But in that chapter, I sort of describe and try and understand and dissect some of those movements that has been successful.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of it has to do with, again, anchoring it in our lives, in our challenges, in our ambitions, and a couple of those movements that I looked at was, for example, Small Business Saturday. I don't know, it's an initiative by American Express. I don't think it's in Australia just yet, but started and it was initiated in the U.S. And the whole idea was, in fact, that in the U.S., like in many other markets, they were witnessing a lot of small community stores closing and people going to big shopping malls instead. So the small communities was really threatened. I'm sure you witnessed that in Australia as well. And so American Express wanted to do something about it. And they created something called Small Business Saturday. But the way they went about it was completely different because they thought and constructed this initiative like a grassroots campaign. So they gave all the small business owners a set of tools, almost like you're doing a political campaign. They gave people in the community an ability to take part in that change. So they found a really distinctive who to own, and actually who that resonates with me a lot. I try to support my local corner store. I try to support the little bakery around the corner. So it was something that also spoke to me. And I think that's sort of the key in all of this, is to sort of find that who would, that thing that motivates us, that thing we want to take part in. Because the terrible thing about communication these days is that everybody's saying, okay, we lack engagement. But most of the time it's because it's not open for engagement.
Yeah.
We're still applying these sort of targeting tactics, and sort of a lot of marketeers are still stuck in this mass marketing world where you're kind of targeting people. And I think that's the change that needs to happen. It's really saying, wait a moment, what can make Rebecca and Thomas take part in this? What do they care about? And how can we use their capabilities, their voice, to be part of this? And so I think the move we're seeing right now with, for example, influencer marketing, et cetera, I think sort of plays into this sort of empowered marketplace. And you know, ironically, again, you know, people trust some 22-year-old man or woman who's plucking a product on Instagram more than they trust an ad. Mm. And we can, of course, talk about the dangers of that in relation to fake news and all these things and transparency, et cetera. But by the end of the day, we need to respond to that that trend and see how we can be part of it.
Yeah, and I think just in reflecting on some of the themes that you've explored over the course of the podcast, the other thing is around how we go about finding universal narratives. So what I mean by that is really taking the time to truly understand the people, like to really get the data, do the research, get the information with regards to what our target audience truly do value and how they're going about, you know, initiating those transformations that you're talking about, and then taking the time to really find the common story, the common narrative that connects all of those people, which is not necessarily an easy thing to do, but I imagine that would be a very important thing to do, because you've got to find something in there that speaks to a large group of people.
Yeah, I think for the most part, as you say, when we work with brands and organizations, it's difficult work. It's hard work.
Yeah.
But the benefit of it is, in fact, that you find something where you can, in fact, enable people, you can make them take part, and it's much more scalable, and you're not dependent on your own sort of marketing resources, because people don't view it necessarily just as a campaign. They see it as an expression or a possibility to realize some of their dreams and ambitions. I mean, take Lego as an example, which is a transformative company by heart. You know, their young and old builders, they want to do all sorts of stuff because they just absolutely love everything that company stands for. And so I think it's really about, you know, opening up your brand for people to play with. And I think most of the time, unfortunately, and you touched on that earlier in your question, it's almost like brands behave like parents with teenagers, huh?
Mm.
because, you know, can we let them go? Can we let them have their own thoughts, their own ideas? You know, what's going to happen? You know, what's going to happen when they move away from home? And it's that sort of thing. And brands are sort of like mom or dad hugging us in that sort of weird way where you're like, oh, brand, please stay away. I have my own opinion now. I know what I want to do. Please stay away, you know?
Yeah, here you is my boundary. To,
you don't have to stalk me at the soccer match, you know? Please don't. and so that's what brands are doing at the moment. I think it's really about time that they kick open that door and they say, we trust in you. You have dreams and ambitions. Let's find that common ground where we can grow together.
Mm. So, Thomas, when you reflect on your journey in writing Hero Trap and in your journey since then, what do you think has been the most significant insight, piece, you know, chunk of wisdom that you have gained during that time that would be useful to share?
I think that was a good question.
Gotcha. No.
Yeah. No, but you know, that's what I love about podcasts. You know, it's almost like, you know, back in, you know, I'm not a religious person, but you know, when you go down and you sit there with the preach and you do your little thing, but probably working with impact startups.
Yeah.
In the sense that when I created the tool, obviously it was for everyone. It was for leaders, it was for brands, organizations, etc. But I actually really didn't take into account how much that shift in perspective would mean for startups. And by that I mean that if you think about it, a lot of impact startups really just embrace and copy what's out there. They run into the purpose economy and they come out with these big too good to be true mm-hmm. narratives about, you know, saving our oceans, changing our communities, whatever it might be. And I can really see sitting with those founders that it opens up a whole new avenue of ideas for them to do this shift from being a preacher to being a coach. So that's probably been my most eye-opening experience. And it's work that I really do enjoy. And we do at the moment, because of that, actually run a number of accelerators for impact startups, because we really do witness how big a difference that makes. And especially also because, you know, we, as I said, we're on the threshold for entering this post-purpose market. And I think to give them that competitive advantage in understanding where things are heading and being able to use that and enable people to take part in that change from the early change journey, I think that's really valuable.
Mm. So Thomas, as my final question for today, it's a simple one for you. Who are you becoming?
Oh, you know, that's a daily battle, you know. That's a daily battle. There's so many things that I'm, you know, as all of us are struggling with. But I think through all these years, from my first book as a young creative at the age of 30, being frustrated, being angry, and wanting to use my skill set for something better than selling cheeseburgers to people who are already way too fat, I think I've found my own purpose, in fact. I think I've found what I enjoy and what I like when I wake up an early morning light.
And it, I can see the lights come up now.
Exactly, and I can actually hear the church bells. I live in center of Copenhagen and being surrounded by churches, so I wake up to these
it's
church bells.
It's a beautiful city. I love Copenhagen. Just as a side note.
No. Yeah, no, thank you. It's a small village, but it's a nice place to live. But so I think I've and it's such a big thing to say maybe, but I think I found myself and I think I found my purpose and what I want to do. And for me, what wakes me up in the morning is in fact to be a catalyst for other people's positive change. It's when some of those impact founders come back to me and they say, you know what, Thomas, that tool, the arrow, really changed the way that I looked at my business. Or I have somebody who reaches out to me and say, you know what, I read your book. I saw this TEDx talk that made me really think about what I was doing in my life and how I could use my skill set as an art director in an ad agency and how I could apply that differently. And I think that's what really makes me tick at the moment. And I think I've found more conviction in that over the years. I think in the beginning, as I think we all feel when we enter into a position of wanting to create change, I think I had many years where I had sort of like an imposter syndrome. Do you know what I mean? I was like,
Yeah, should I be here? Yeah, I get
Am I relevant? Am I putting on too much responsibility on myself?
Yeah.
And so I think I found now the confidence and the direction and the thing that makes me happy.
Well, I can certainly attest to the fact that you have been a catalyst for positive change for me and for all our listeners on the DNA of Purpose podcast. So thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today. And we all want to know now, where can we buy the book?
You don't have to buy it. You listen to this podcast, right? And hopefully that is enough transformation for you. And then you save a few bucks. But I'm sure you can Google it, right?
Yeah, you absolutely can Google it. And you also have a very informative website as well, if anyone is interested in learning more about your work. What's the URL on the website?
So that would be my name, so Thomas Colster, so Thomas with an H, thomascolster.com. And one thing I might want to plug, in fact, is that I realize that so many people are so busy, especially in the world of advertising and business, and very few people have time to read. And so because of that, we actually did an audio book that summarizes the whole book in just 1 hour.
I love it. I can attest to the fact that is exactly how I research for today's podcast. So it's well worth it and very, very clever because, once again, you're thinking about the consumer. True to your word.
it's the book you can listen to while you do the dishes or when you go for your little walk or whatever. And yeah, so I just felt that nobody had time to read. And even though I love books, I love reading myself, I thought I just rather want to put that out there because it's easy for everyone. It's easy for you, right? So I'm happy that you enjoyed it.
I absolutely enjoyed it. And as I enjoyed today's conversation as well, thank you so much for joining us on the DNA of Purpose podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Now, if you would like updates on upcoming episodes as they are released, in addition to good news posts from the world of science and technology, please follow Future Crunch on social media, or if you care to do so, sign up to our newsletter at futurecrunch.com. You can also download our ebook on what we refer to as the Great Transformation, which is available at our website. And if you have time, please leave us a review on iTunes. We'd love to hear from you. This podcast has been produced by the team at Supernova Tribe Studio.